From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Gail Harris, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. A fierce volley of campaign attack ads on military service signaled an escalation in the fight for the military vote this week, and both candidates took their message directly to veterans at the VFW convention in Ohio.
All our nation's veterans have made serving America the highest priority of their lives, and serving our veterans is one of the highest priorities of my administration.
In a tight race with a wartime backdrop, soldiers and veterans might just make the difference. And the two candidates are trying hard to differentiate themselves from one another.
This is about keeping a sacred promise. It's about love of country. And it is about protecting those who have risked their lives to protect ours.
In a time when military matters matter more, the candidates are doing everything they can to woo the men and women of the armed services. Tonight on Point, the fight for the military vote, military families, veterans, and presidential politics 2004. And joining me now from Washington is John Zogby, president and CEO of the polling powerhouse Zogby International. John, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Tell us, what are the numbers you have on how veterans and military families vote traditionally and also are leaning this year?
Traditionally, military families are skewed Republican, and substantially so. Normally, they're a good 10 to 15 points more, depending on the election and other factors. But they vote conservative values, patriotism and traditional values. This year, what we're seeing is a tighter race. George W. Bush still leads. I'd venture a guess George W. Bush will probably win with military families, but for two significant reasons, John Kerry will do better than Democrats normally do.
And those two reasons are?
Well, first, the war in Iraq. You have a situation where the country is split, where, in fact, you have a net negative now among Americans as a whole on the war in Iraq. But you have some strong feelings among military families in particular. In fact, something we did not have during Vietnam were parents of and families of active service men and women on duty vocally against the war. And the second reason is that we have a Vietnam War veteran actually running this year. And though some would argue, a bona fide war hero who is running. And that certainly is something that's important to military families.
And, John, do your polls get to the question of how people actually view the candidate's military persona? Is it something that's important to them?
It generally is important. It's more important to men than it is to women. It's important to military families. We haven't crunched numbers on it in a while, but suffice it to say that it's part of both the traditional value and also the fact that with the nation at war, the president as commander-in-chief becomes, particularly something that's accented for military families, and hence, their feeling that there should be somebody with military experience.
And John Zogby, there was a poll taken in Pennsylvania yesterday, not one of yours, showed significantly more military families turning against the war, and also Kerry widening his lead over George Bush there in a crucial swing state, 47% to 42%. Does that surprise you? Are you seeing similar numbers elsewhere?
I am. And not surprisingly, there are other variables. I mean, military families don't vote simply as military families, but they vote on the economy, they vote on the war in Iraq, and they vote on health care, and so on. And what we're seeing is just generally speaking, Kerry pulling away in Pennsylvania into a comfortable high single-digit lead. And so in that respect, I would certainly endorse those numbers. These days, Pennsylvania is a Democratic state. Conservative Democrats are there. There are pro-life Democrats in Pennsylvania. But I have no doubt that that poll is accurate.
And do you think voters in other states will be taking their cue from Pennsylvania?
Not taking their cue from Pennsylvania, taking their cue from you know, all those other variables. But right now, I have to tell you that I find the president to be on the ropes, not simply on the war in Iraq, though that has already created divisions within the country, and there's very high passion on both sides, but perhaps higher passion, greater passion on the part of those who oppose the war in Iraq. But at the same time, there are things that generally are just seen as not going well. In the context of the country as a whole and in the battleground states like Pennsylvania, where majorities are saying the country is not headed in the right direction, and for that matter, that the president does not deserve to be reelected.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to talk to you.
John Zogby is president and CEO of Zogby International. He spoke with us from Washington. And we're talking this hour about the fight for the military vote, military families, veterans, and presidential politics 2004. And we ask you, do you want your president to have served in the military? Why or why not? Are you a veteran? Do you vote as one or as an ordinary citizen? Is all the military imagery too much? Should presidential politics steer clear of some of those macho military images? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is Christopher Gelpe, an associate professor of political science at Duke University and also co-author with Peter Fever of Choosing Your Battles, American Civil-Military Relations and the Use of Force. Christopher, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Hi, Jack.
Hi, and welcome to our guest.
Jack, I want to go to you first because you're always so good at putting these things in context for us from a historical perspective. So tell us a little bit about what role veterans have played in presidential politics in the past.
Well, there are really two traditions, and they both emerged after the Civil War. One was the tradition of the bloody shirt, and the other, you could say, the tradition of the soft blanket. The bloody shirt was basically a staple of GOP politics, and it emerged at a campaign rally when a Union veteran held up a bloodstained tunic, and he urged the crowd to, quote, vote the way you shot during the war. That is, the Democrats were the party of the South. Vote against the South just as you shot against the South during the war. Mm-hmm. And this became a absolute staple of Republican oratory and invective that, let me just give you a taste of it. This is Oliver P. Morton, Republican governor of Illinois. In short, the Democratic Party may be described as a common sewer and loathsome receptacle into which is emptied every element of treason, North and South, and every element of inhumanity and barbarism, which has dishonored the age. Well, that was the bloody shirt, and boy, did it get Republicans turned out to vote. And you had general after general, Grant, Hayes, Garfield, McKinley, elected president. The other tradition, the soft blanket, though, really emerged when Lincoln set up the Veterans Bureau. And if you go and look at the building today, one of his sentences is there, to him who hath borne the battle and to his widow and to his orphan. And really, the welfare state began then in the pension system for U.S. veterans. And that was one of our first experiment with Social Security or with a sort of nurturing state. And, of course, that tradition revived in a historic way in World War II when, in 1944, both houses of Congress unanimously passed the GI Bill of Rights, which made possible college education and home ownership and mobility for 10 million American veterans. That was that tradition. The other tradition of the bloody shirt continues regularly, where at VFW conventions, patriotic sentiments are urged, and traitors and people who are weak on defense are arraigned. So there are these two sort of moments in the American political tradition of veterans politics.
And Chris Gelpe, I want to hear from you on this point as well. And how important has it been that a candidate for president had served in the military?
Well, it certainly hasn't been a prerequisite in past elections, and we can see with, you know, people like Bill Clinton getting elected twice. But it certainly doesn't hurt, and I think especially for that this year is especially interesting because I think it can be especially important for Democrats who if one sort of plays to sort of stereotypes, Democrats are viewed as soft on defense, and as Jack was saying, you know, the sort of bloody shirt attack against Democrats, and having, I think, veteran status for the Democratic candidate may at least potentially sort of nullifies some of that critique, and so makes it potentially more important in this election than it has been in the past.
Do you think we can really generalize, though, what the veterans' vote is? I mean, are they a bloc? Do we know what moves them? Do they vote as one, or is this just a matter of individuals who happen to be veterans?
Well, one interesting thing, actually, is that we know less about how veterans vote than we should. There is not actually historically a lot of polling data on how veterans vote. Many of the surveys, you know, the National Election Study and things don't actually ask most of the time whether people are veterans. So we don't know as much as we should. That being said, veterans from the survey research Peter Fever and I have done, there's some things that suggest that there are certain issues that stand out for veterans. In particular, they tend to care more about foreign policy type issues, as one might expect. A second thing is that they have certain priorities about how military force should be used. They tend to be sort of supporters of the Powell Doctrine and the notion that force should be used massively. And third, then, you know, much like Jack's point about the soft blanket, they care about veterans' benefits and things like that. So that's sort of three sets of issues that I think tend to motivate them.
And Jack Beatty, with Kerry, how much does it complicate the situation that he saw combat in Vietnam and then when he got home very vocally turned against the war? Because there does seem to be this kind of green code of silence that says what you saw on the battlefield should stay there, and when you get home, keep your mouth shut.
I think that really has hurt him, I mean, among some veterans, although other people look at this and see he was on the right. He sort of lived up to both sides of his generation, the military challenge and then the challenge of conscience against it. But, you know, there is a gap even today between Vietnam veterans and those from other wars. Joseph Kennedy, the congressman, told me a poignant story of the Veterans Committee in the 80s. He said that when the World War II and Korea guys would leave the room, would be testifying, and then the Vietnam guys would come in to testify, the World War II and Korean guys would leave the room. Why? You guys lost your war. Mm. So there's a kind of bitter, or at least there was, probably dying out now with the older veterans. But there was a kind of bitterness just about even veterans of that war.
Chris, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on that point.
Well, I do think that Kerry's testifying before the Senate and so on when he returned definitely is a polarizing event for a lot of veterans, especially Vietnam veterans. However, I would say from the polling we've done, it suggests that Kerry actually does slightly better on average among Vietnam vets than he does among other ones. And on the more general point about how Vietnam veterans were treated, it certainly is the case in general that Vietnam veterans were not, you know, embraced in the way that veterans of previous and subsequent wars have been. And I think that Kerry's speech at the convention there, and really sort of the lionizing of the Vietnam vets, him and others, is potentially, I think, an important moment for Vietnam vets.
We're talking this hour about the fight for the military vote, military families, veterans, and presidential politics 2004. Do you want your president to have served in the military? Why? Are you a veteran? Do you vote as one? Or do you cast your ballot as an ordinary citizen? Should John Kerry's medals be an issue? And what about questions of President Bush's time in the National Guard? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harrison for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The This is On Point. I'm Gail Harrison for Tom Ashbrook, and we're talking this hour about the fight for the military vote, military families, veterans, and presidential politics 2004. This week, both candidates made their case before the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention in Ohio. President Bush emphasized his support through his funding initiatives.
My administration has a solid record of accomplishment for our veterans. When my 2005 budget is approved by Congress, we will have increased overall funding for our nation's veterans by almost $20 billion, or 40% since 2001. We have increased funding for our veterans more in 4 years than the previous administration did in 8 years.
And so we ask, are you a veteran? Do you vote as one? Or are you just a veteran who votes? Do you want your president to have served in the military? Why? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm joined tonight by Christopher Gelpe, Associate Professor of Political Science at Duke University. And also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News Analyst Jack Beattie. And Chris, I want you to cast your mind back a couple of weeks to John Kerry's salute at the DNC. In many ways, that may have been the most memorable moment of the convention. What do you think he was trying to do with that? Was that a nod to veterans exclusively, or to an audience that wasn't all in the room, so many people who are frightened, frankly, in a post-9/11 world?
Well, I think he was doing that. I also think he was trying to sort of set the tone or frame the campaign as Lieutenant Kerry versus Lieutenant Bush. So much of his speech focused on that part of his service, as opposed, say, to his service in the Senate, that he really was trying to frame the election as, well, as I said, as Lieutenant Kerry versus Lieutenant Bush, because I think he thinks that he wins that that comparison.
But has this whole question become much more of an issue since 9/11? I mean, there were questions that were raised in 92 and 96 about Bill Clinton's lack of military service, but that was not the overwhelming story of either of those campaigns, even though his opponents both times were veterans, George H.W. Bush and Bob Dole.
Yes, I think 9/11 does matter in this sense, because it has made foreign policy and the war on terrorism and then the war on Iraq such important issues. And so, Bill Clinton could run and win on it's the economy, stupid, because it was a safe world and military threats were very low, on the sort of radar screen. I think, some recent polling data has shown that the largest proportion of Americans rate foreign policy as the most important problem facing this country since the largest proportion since Vietnam. And so I think September 11th and the war on terrorism and the war in Iraq have highlighted those issues, and that makes John Kerry's military experience more important, because he can't because it makes him more vulnerable to the sort of traditional critique of Democrats that they're soft on defense and so on.
All right, Chris, well, stand by with us for a moment. We want to go to a couple of the people who are down in the trenches, as it were. Doug Clifford has been working as a veteran for Kerry. He's a sergeant, U.S. Air Force, retired, and he's the Massachusetts veteran coordinator for the Kerry Edwards campaign, served in Vietnam in 1968 and 69, and is also a retired college teacher. Doug, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So what are you hearing out there? What are veterans saying to you?
Well, I think that it's important to point out that Senator Kerry has received a tremendous response from veterans all over the country. When we were out in Iowa at the end of last year, at the beginning of this year, it made a big difference in the caucuses out there. And then we went to New Hampshire in January, and there was a lot of support there. And just every place that he has gone, he's gotten a tremendous amount of support from veterans. Of course, especially Vietnam veterans, but veterans from every era. We had some events at the convention this year that were very well attended, and there was veterans from the World War II right up to Iraq veterans, and so they really have a lot of support for Senator Kerry.
And Doug, why do you think that Band of Brothers image is so powerful this year? Why does it seem to be resonating so much with people?
Well, I think that, first of all, it's important to point out that it's somewhat ironic here that President Bush is running as a wartime president. So it's really, in many ways, it's President Bush that brings up this issue of the military and therefore veterans. And so what we have here is we have a candidate who has a distinguished wartime record. And I think that that's really important to consider.
And what about those attack ads we've been seeing on TV that say, you know, John Kerry's no war hero, he's lied about his war record? What are you hearing about those?
Well, I think that those are so discredited, it really is almost not worth talking too much about. But, you know, we like to quote Republican Senator John McCain, who says that those people are dishonorable and dishonest. It's clearly a Republican campaign action that is funded by Republicans from Texas. But even each of those people, what they say is just so discredited. There was an article in the news today about this Larry Thurlow who, you know, claims there was no gunfire, and he received a Bronze Star for the same action that cites the amount of gunfire that they were under. And so it just goes on and on. These commanders, Elliott and Hoffman, these guys came, they wrote positive fitness reports for Senator Kerry. They even came to Boston in 1996 to support Senator Kerry and to stand by him and to say that he was a good leader and that he was basically a war hero in Vietnam. So the rest of this stuff is it's nonsense that lacks credibility.
Well, Doug, one quick final question in the few seconds we have left. What are the veterans you speak with saying about Iraq?
Well, that it's a mess, that Iraq is a mess, and that even if it's something that we had to do, then what really needs to be done is we need to find a new approach to working things out there. And it's not a matter of, you know, cutting and running and pulling out of there, but it's a matter of finding some way to get support from other countries in this world. And I think that that's what veterans want to see. Veterans want to see us going out and getting some help and not going this thing alone. And it's getting to be pretty ugly there. Into watching the number of American casualties is very, very sad. And the number of casualties, it seems to be increasing as time goes on.
Well, Doug, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Doug Clifford is the Massachusetts Veteran Coordinator for the Kerry Edwards Campaign. And we turn now to Joe Repia, who's standing by in Minneapolis. He is the Minnesota Veterans Co-Chair of the Bush-Cheney Campaign, 04 there, and is also a Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve, and he is retired. Joe, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you, Gail. How are you?
Well, very well, thanks. And we're glad you could join us. And tell us, what are you hearing veterans saying in terms of the issues that matter most to them? What are they looking to these two presidential candidates to do for them?
Well, you know, I have a different perspective than the gentleman that you just had on. This election, I think most Americans and most veterans agree, is not about past history 35 years ago, what somebody did in Vietnam or didn't do in Vietnam. John Kerry served his country honorably, as did George W. Bush. This election is about who can best lead this nation in the war against terror in the 21st century, and John Kerry's record definitely shows that he is not that man. I personally visited Iraq last year as a freelance journalist for 8 days, and I can tell you, and I can give you examples where the comment that Iraq is a mess just isn't correct. It's the Democratic spin machine that, quite frankly, wants to see us do bad in Iraq because they're looking to try to get back into power.
So you think Iraq is better than what we're being told or what's being shown on the news?
Absolutely. You know, the troops that I saw over there, both in Mosul, Balad, and Baghdad when I was there, you know, there are some hot spots, no question about it, within Iraq. And it's in that Sunni triangle that the people that we kicked out of power when we captured Saddam want to get back into power. But for the better part of Iraq, it's a lot better and a much different situation. A lot of troops say to me when they get back, you know, what are they reporting over here? You know, it's obvious also that the troops were very upset that the reporters are no longer embedded with them because, you know, the real truth of the successes over there is not getting out. Now, I'll give you a good example. A year and a half ago, just before the war started, I had an Iraqi friend here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, who was willing to go on talk radio and speak about his family in Iraq, speak about his experiences in Iraq, but only if he used an assumed name because he was afraid his family would be persecuted back there. Today, and for the last 3 weeks, his wife and oldest son have been visiting relatives in Iraq for the first time in 25 years because it's safe enough for them to do that. And I can tell you, you know, if it wasn't safe, these folks wouldn't be going back and visiting relatives.
Joe, let me get back to steer us back to politics, if I can. Which part of the Bush message is resonating most with the veterans you speak with?
The best part of the Bush message that is resonating with veterans is John Kerry's record in the 19 years that he's been in the Senate. His 12 votes against military pay raises, his continuous votes against weapons systems that currently are winning the war on terror in Afghanistan and in Iraq, his votes to slash and reduce the defense budget, 38 votes, as a matter of fact, if I had that number correct, his votes to gut the intelligence systems, the fact that he's 76% of the time been absent from the Senate Intelligence Committee meetings that have been held, you know, the veterans know John Kerry's record.
Yeah. All right, Joe, I'm sorry. We have to leave it there for now, but we thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Gail, and hope to be with you again sometime.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Repia is a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, retired, and also Minnesota Veterans co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign 04.
Gail?
Yes.
Yeah, can I just put a thought in there? I just want to correct some of the things that gentleman said. I mean, he repeated this business about Kerry voting against defense bills, well, and weapons systems. Well, that has been looked into thoroughly, and he voted for cutting the same systems that Dick Cheney recommended cutting when he was Secretary of Defense. Kerry approved, I think, 19 of 21 defense appropriations bills that came before him. And this idea that he gutted the intelligence budget, he cut a fraction of a fraction out of a part of the CIA that the Republican administration at the time wanted cut too. So this is just almost pure propaganda.
I have to ask a question about that as well, Jack, because, you know, some people are following this very closely, others are not. You know, when the argument gets to that kind of detail, do most people pay attention, or is it just, you know, kind of, okay, fine, I've heard it, I don't care?
I don't know, but that one has been corrected by the Washington Post. It's been corrected by the New York Times. It just has come out again and again and again that if you put Kerry up against George H.W. Bush and Dick Cheney, the things he wanted cut were the things they wanted cut, too.
Well, and also Kerry struck back today, as you probably know, Jack Beatty, at one of these Republican-funded ads that questioned his war record, and wonder if this is a lesson from Michael Dukakis' campaign, who did not respond to the charges against him, Kerry certainly being much more aggressive than Dukakis was.
He certainly is, and that's a signal that he's been giving all along. And that's one of the ways he draws on his Vietnam thing. He says, I'm tough. You know, I fought for my country when I was a young man, and I'll defend it as a president. That's one of the things it does for him. But on the other side, he says, and here's sort of the peace message about Vietnam. You know, he says the United States doesn't have to go to war because it wants to, only because it has to. He's signaling, look, I know what war is, and I don't want promiscuously to involve U.S. forces in this sort of thing.
All right, let's go to our phone.
I was just going to add something to that about the response to the attack ads. I thought the debate going on between Doug and Joe actually exactly played out the way the campaigns are going to want to pitch things to veterans, because although Kerry was, you know, outraged and so on about those ads, I actually think the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth sort of thing is not a bad thing for Kerry, because as long as the conversation is Lieutenant Kerry versus Lieutenant Bush, that's the conversation that Kerry wants to have. And what the Bush campaign is going to try to do to swing veterans away from Kerry, because Kerry has made such, I think, pretty strong inroads with veterans, is he's going to do exactly what Joe did, which is to go to the Senate record and start nitpicking away at this and that vote.
Mm. And Chris Chelpy, what do you think about Kerry's striking back today? It seems to be a somewhat different tack that the campaign is taking. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's good for Kerry for that story to play as long as it can, because, as I said, that as long as we're going over what everybody's Vietnam record was, you know, Kerry's going to come out stronger than Bush. What actually surprises me about the whole thing is that the Bush campaign has been reticent to tell Swift Boat Veterans for Truth to stop running the ads, because I think those ads and that whole conversation is probably not the conversation that the president wants to be having.
And in the few seconds we have before we need to go to a break, do you think those ads serve their purpose? Do they sway votes?
Oh, I doubt it. No, I mean, if anything, I think they sway people towards Kerry, because it's so as Doug was talking about it, it's so easy to rebut the factual content of what they said that I don't think those ads help Bush a bit.
All right, we're going to take a brief break, and then we're going to be back to discuss more the fight for the military vote, military families, veterans, and presidential politics 2004. And we ask, are you a veteran? Do you vote as one? Or are you a veteran who votes? Do you want your president to have served in the military? And why? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harris, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Gail Harris, in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're talking this hour about the fight for the military vote, military families, veterans, and presidential politics 2004. The candidates both worked to gain support this week at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention in Ohio. John Kerry put the spotlight on an issue many feel strongly about.
The job will be done when 500,000 veterans are not excluded from the VA health care system. The job will be done when we're not closing VA hospitals so that veterans have a difficulty reaching the very care that they need. The job will be done when veterans are not asked for increasing copayments, enrollment fees, and other charges that shift the burden of care to other veterans and drive more than a million veterans out of the system.
Is all the military imagery a little too much? Should presidential politics steer clear of macho military images? Is there an element of cynicism here? Are the candidates exploiting the military? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And a lot of you want to talk to us. Let's go first to Elk Rapids, Michigan. Gordon's on the line. Hello, Gordon.
Tom, good evening.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm just listening to the program. It's an excellent program about an issue that should be talked about. I believe that I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I'm certainly hoping that veterans will see through some of the just the blurbs you get from the Bush campaign and look at the whole truth. It's coming out more every day. I mean, the half-truths are easy to just listen to and try to make a decision, but knowing the facts are very important in this election year.
And, Gordon, do you think the veterans are paying extra special attention this time?
I would certainly hope so. In fact, I know they are. When it comes to veterans' issues such as health care, the Bush campaign neglected to point out the fact that the increase has gone up 150%, I mean, in the years for enrollment. And like Senator Kerry mentioned, it's difficult to even enroll in some of the community centers and local veterans hospitals. They're overburdened and underfunded desperately. And it's up to budget cuts and the whims of budget cuts. So it's a very important thing to veterans.
All right, Gordon. Well, thank you so much for the call. To Plymouth, Massachusetts next, we want to hear from Tom. Hello, Tom, and welcome.
Welcome. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What did you want to share with us?
Well, I'd just like to share that I'm a veteran from Massachusetts, and it's odd to me that Senator Kerry never seems to be in to vote on the issues that are important, to his constituency.
So you're a Bush guy?
Well, yeah, I would have to say yes, 110%.
And because?
Well, I think he pretty much did the best he could, when he got in. And after 9/11, I just think that, he did a really good job with going after the terrorists.
Okay, Tom, thank you for the call. Let's go to Ralph now, who's on the line from Queens, New York. Hello, Ralph, and welcome.
Yes, hello, good evening. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran, and I want to say that to the call before this one, the Bush administration, I don't know if people are aware, I follow the news very closely. Bush administration has been making cuts in veterans' benefits since 2001, and now it's close to election time, suddenly he's turning around. Also, I want to say I believe in just wars. I think World War II was a just war. I think that the Vietnam War was a war about business, as everybody found out later on. And I believe that this war is a war about business and basically oil. And I don't know why it's not being mentioned, the people that are making money off of this. I don't know, you heard about the company Halliburton. I mean, it's no secret,
No, I think they've gotten a lot of coverage. Ralph, thank you so much for the call.
You never hear about it.
Thank you for being with us. I want to go back to my guest now. Christopher Gelpe is an associate professor of political science at Duke University, and also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Chris, to you first. What do you make of Bill Schneider's report on CNN that when asked if it's important for a president to have been a veteran, people who have served in the military say no, civilians say yes, and women say yes very strongly? What do you make of that?
Well, I hadn't heard that specific report, but that is very very interesting, and it is I think consistent with the fact that those who have served in the military tend to have a very strong understanding of civil-military relations and the obligations of military subordinates to civilian command. So they are very taught very strongly that they are to obey the orders of the civilian commander, and it's the president's job to choose, when and where we fight, and then it's their job to go and figure out how to fight and how to win. So I think the military veterans are very much taught that it is their job to obey the orders of the commander-in-chief, whether or not that commander-in-chief happens to be a veteran, and in fact that the commander-in-chief is, a civilian who they're supposed to obey. So that's something that they're taught very strongly. Civilians are actually relatively ignorant of civil-military relations and are much more responsive to the sort of images of military patriotism. And so I think that's why they respond to that. The finding about women is interesting to me. I wonder, though, if that is the case because so many fewer women are veterans.
Well, good question. Sorry I don't have the answer to that one, but we'll continue watching it, as I'm sure you will, with great interest. I want to get in one more phone call, this time to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Joseph's on the line. Hi, Joseph.
Hello, ma'am. I'm a young, actual disabled American veteran. I was a sergeant in the Army Infantry and served in Korea, and I was a peacekeeper in the Middle East briefly. I kind of have 2 points. I'm sorry if it takes a little bit to say them both. One thing I want to say is, first off, I am very much against President Bush being reelected. I feel that we just quickly went into this war in Iraq. And the one thing that people don't seem to realize is that war does terrible things to the winners and to the losers. You know, not only are we killing an immense. I mean, I read a report today, something that we've killed something like 11,000 to 13,000 Iraqis in the last year and a half. You know, and not only is that terrible, is that, you know, pure hell, but when you take 19, 18, 20-year-old kids and take them overseas and give them a rifle and say, you know, this is the enemy, you tend to dehumanize them, and it turns good people, otherwise good people, into bad people. And that's I think, really kind of the lesson of Abu Ghraib and the lesson of My Lai in Vietnam and everything is war should be an absolute last resort, and because you're going to hurt the people, the good guys that are going to fight it for you.
We'll have to leave it there, Joseph. We thank you so much for being with us and sharing those thoughts. Jack Beatty, I want to give you the last word here. How are we to understand this, both from a historical perspective and in terms of this campaign and the urgent issues that underlie it?
Well, I think there's a part of the military that is not about the market. It's about honor, and it's about solidarity. And that boat of Carey's, you know, it's a lot like the boat of his great ancestor, John Winthrop. And on the Arabella, John Winthrop said, "We must abridge ourselves of our superfluities to provide for others' necessities." That's part of the military spirit. It's a critique of individualism. It says we're all in it together. We all have to go at the same time. That's a new note. We haven't heard that from Mr. Bush. He takes the individualist approach, and we'll see how that works for Kerry.
Well, Jack Beatty, thank you so much, as always, for being with us.
Thank you.
I also want to say thanks to Chris Gelpe, who joined us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Chris, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Gelpe is an associate professor of political science at Duke University and also co-author of the new book, Choosing Your Battles, American Civil-Military Relations and the Use of Force. You can continue the conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. In just a moment, a look at life inside a battleground state. This is On Point. According to the latest polls, John Kerry has taken a 2-point lead over George W. Bush in the key battleground state of Ohio. Many analysts feel that Ohio, with its 20 electoral votes, could be this year's Florida, the uber swing state, where a razor-thin margin of victory could decide the whole election. Washington, D.C. reporter Ann McPheeters recently returned to her hometown of Springfield, Ohio, for a vacation. And what she found was a state deep in the throes of a chaotic presidential campaign. In this radio diary, Ann McPheeters says it is appropriate that the race for the White House could be determined by her heartland neighbors.
In between covering the Democrats in Boston and the Republicans in New York, I headed home to Springfield, Ohio, for a family reunion, and frankly, a respite from politics 24/7. The morning after I arrived, there was Senator John Kerry and his entourage in town to campaign. Shortly thereafter, President Bush and his entourage came to campaign a few miles away. We're all warriors in the battleground states. What, you may ask, is life like these days in a state that sees presidential candidates come and go with the regularity of price changes at the corner gas station? For one thing, people are paying attention. Normally, there's a frisson of interest during the conventions, and then after Labor Day, voters get serious. This year, people already are serious about the election. True, the yard signs in Springfield aren't up yet, but the Annenberg Public Policy Center was certainly right about voters expressing far more interest in the election than they did in 2000. Clark County, Ohio, which has Springfield as the proud county seat, is one of the hot counties in the country. In 2000, it went for Al Gore, but just barely. The Democratic Party in Ohio has fallen on hard times. The governor and the two senators are Republican, as is much of the state legislature. Yet, when I ask passersby whether they are Republicans or Democrats, the split is about even. Republicans have vowed that on November 2nd, Clark County is going to vote Republican. Democrats are just as determined that Kerry will win the county. People in Ohio listening to Bush talk about how much the economy has improved shake their heads. Everyone knows somebody who has lost a good job and can't get another. When Bush speaks about how the war in Iraq has been vital to this nation's security, doubt creeps onto faces. Yet voters here still like Bush and want to believe in him. Many Democrats are far from sold on Kerry. They liked his fiery anti-Bush speech in Boston, but agree he has not closed the deal with their undecided friends. Repeatedly, I hear people say, "I just don't know much about John Kerry." What galls both parties in Clark County is that despite truly awesome groundwork this year, neither side feels any more confident about the outcome. The pool of voters who will decide the election here is small. Many may not even have registered yet. It is ironic that in a presidential campaign that will be the most expensive in world history, this election could come down to the passion and hard work of local volunteers in Clark County, where the county fair is still a big deal, where the 4-H movement started and flourishes, where potluck suppers are the coin of the realm, where friends shame friends into registering to vote, where discussions about politics are big and lively and revolve around real issues as well as personalities. Not just ironic, but good, the way politics was meant to be.
Ann McPheeters is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Toledo Blade and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm Dale Harris in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.